Hi, good afternoon. This is Amy Toy, and I'm the host of Angel Answers. And welcome everyone on this special Monday. We've got a lot going on. We have a special guest coming, special co-host actually, Christopher Nigro, and he'll be coming in about 10 after the hour. You know, calling in, and we're going to be discussing secrets. And is it good to keep secrets? And then I'm going to talk about the Archangel of the Month. And this will be the last show on the Archangel of the Month. So before we get into our meetup material, I got some announcements. I torture you guys with this. But this is upcoming guests, and I want to make you aware. We have a special guest. I have a special guest coming on next week, the 29th, Karen Noe. Now, this is a really cool book if you pick it up from Amazon or Kindle. It's a really good book. It's called Through the Eyes of Another, A Medium's Guide to Creating Heaven on Earth by Encountering Your Life Review Now. This is really good, and I'm getting into the book, and I'm enjoying what I'm reading. Every book that I read on the show, that's been sent to me is very beneficial. So this is a really good book. You know, she's going to be on next week discussing that. How about, you have to cross to the other side to do your life review, because when you go through that white light and they make you do a life review when if you've had a near-death experience, that's quite interesting. Been through a couple of them. On the 5th of November, I've got Mickey Jacobs, a gifted channeler and spiritual teacher. She's coming on to discuss some projects she's into. And then on the 12th, I got Margaret Ann Lempo. She's an author and a visionary leader in the world of metaphysics, and author on books on crystals. So I thought I'd bring somebody, a book on crystals, that's been expressed, in different people have expressed interest in that. So that will be good. On the 19th of November, I have Becky Hawkins, author of Transitions, A Nurse's Education About Life After Death. So that's really cool. And then we have, of course, the pre-recorded interview with John Mundy. He's the author on Living A Course in Miracles, An Essential Guide to the Classic Text. And he will be, that's cool. That's a really good, if you're into the Course in Miracles work, or if you want to know more about it, John goes into the basics of the course in different terms. So we broke it down for you in the interview. And then, where you can find me on angelanswers11.com, or you can email me on angelicamy35@gmail.com. On Twitter, I'm @angelanswers11. I'm on a Facebook page. I have Angel Answers with Amy Toy. And if you want to call me for any questions, readings, I do long-distance healing, 1-855-851-3405. And now I've got the blog up, which is attached to the Angel Answers 11 website. And the blog, if you want to look it up, I'm going to do different thoughts on shows from now on. I'll do a couple blogs a week, and if you have comments or if you want to hear something, it's angelanswers11.wordpress.com. And so, and also I'm going to be on a guest on our sister radio show, Well-Rounded Corners, with Ruth Ann Mack, on Tuesday, November the 20th, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that will be good. I will be taking calls at the second half of the show. So it's the second half, not the first half. And you can reach me if you're in the U.S. or Canada, 1-888-627-6008. And with outside the U.S. and Canada, it's 530-413-4522. And you can Skype and, you can look up. So we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk about the Archangel of the Month before Christopher comes on, and I'll do his introduction. Now, Archangel Raziel, and the reason why I picked this angel is the Angel of Mysteries. Now, Raziel is an angel that some people, different religions, elements use Raziel. And he is the archangel of, keeping secrets. And it's rumored that Raziel was so close to the throne of God that he heard the secrets of God. And he wrote this book called, The Book of Raziel the Angel, or Sefer Raziel Hamak. I'm not into Hebrew, so if I didn't do that right, oh well. He's really cool. This angel really does go into the secrets of the soul. And, if you're working with the archangels, like I said, this is going to be the last show for the Archangel of the Month live recorded show. I may have repeats, from time to time, which I do. Things come up in that, and I have a lot of archives to choose from. This archangel is just really good. It's according to the legend that, there's a couple of things I'll tell you about Raziel. He's really referred to in the Kabbalah. That's the Jewish book, the Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism. And, you know, they talk about how the angels, he's the angel of wisdom, and they, you know, sat close to the throne of God. And Raziel begins the book by stating, "Blessed are the wise by the mysteries coming from the wisdom." So Raziel talks about different things about the etheric plane and the earthly plane in this book. And, you know, Archangel Raziel, he's got some different roles in our life. Like I said, he's the keeper of secrets. And sometimes you can work with this archangel, you know, to keep secrets and if you want to keep something. And that's why Chris is coming on today. We're going to have some debate about when is it appropriate to keep secrets and when it's not. So, you know, he's going to add his two cents in. And Chris is pretty cool. He's really good at, you know, debating subjects that he's very passionate about. But the Jewish tradition talks about that Raziel helps to protect the other angels. And there's different levels of heaven. And if you have ever read Dante's Inferno, there's different bowels of hell, quote-unquote, if you believe in hell. You know, it's left to debate. That's left to your conscience. But he is the patron saint also, patron angel of lawyers. You know, they do need an archangel there, too, those lawyers, some of them. And they write, you know, about the laws and the government and the officials and, you know, and he's also the angel of police officers and judges. So Raziel, you know, he's got a different element to him. Sometimes he is pictured in gold with a, you know, purple background. I heard some people say he's purple. It all depends. It really does. It depends on what your interpretation of this is. You know, he comes to you when you need him. I mean, a lot of this stuff, a lot of the archangels come to you when you need them. And like I said, my role is to bring knowledge to you so you can use the archangels in your daily life. And sometimes the angels, the archangels especially, they have a higher vibration when you're working with them. You'll feel that. And I've worked with many archangels, not this one in particular. I know a friend of mine, she used to talk about this archangel in particular. But he's, it's also according to some sources, like the book was passed down through generations of Enoch, you know, who in angel folklore, we'll call it, later became the archangel Metatron, and he's incorporated, you know, who has incorporated his own writings. You know, Enoch, you know, the archangel Raphael gave it to Noah. You know, there's a lot of historical background there if you want to do research, but, you know, keeping secrets, you know, the Kabbalah is, you know, into the Jewish mysticism. I took some courses on the Kabbalah, and that's a very intense, it's the Tree of Life, and maybe we'll have somebody on about the Kabbalah. I'm not too sure. Like I said, what I'm bringing to the shows coming up in the next couple months, you know, we're going to take a little bit of a different direction. We're going to still focus on the angels, but we're going to do different, you know, I'm going to be doing different things. And I refer to as my spiritual team. You know, they influence me and they help me with what I need to bring to you. So, you know, we're going to do a show on tarot. Maybe we'll do a show on the Kabbalah. You know, different things like that, crystals. I'm looking forward to that because crystals have been influenced in my life, you know, in the healing, you know, profession that I have, integrated energy therapy. So Archangel Raziel, the keeper of secrets, the angel of mysteries. So I kind of chew on that a bit. And he also, from my understanding, you know, helps with past life and, you know, influences. So sometimes when you're working with the archangels, it's good to kind of do, they have different multifunctions. They're just not like Raziel is close to the throne of God. You know, there's different things there that you could use. And, you know, Raziel also, if you do chakra work, helps with the, you know, the brow chakra. And, you know, he works with different energies, and he's a higher... Now, I tried to work with this archangel in the past. He's got a little bit different higher vibration than I'm used to working with. I usually work with either Raphael, Michael, who's the protector, you know, different ones, Jeremiel, you know, which is good for a life review. That's, you know, I think that's who it is, Jeremiel. You could work with different archangels and different things. So, you know, like I said, I'll have different archive shows. So that would be good. And when we talk about, you know, the archangels, they're accessible to everyone and anyone. They're not just for a few, spoken few here. So, you know, just be mindful of that when you're working with the angels. You know, they're accessible to everyone and anyone. And, you know, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to work with them. So it's, the angels are cool. Like I said, that's why I'm doing the show. I want the audience and the listeners to know that the angels are someone that we really can use and utilize in our daily lives. So, and I believe Christopher should be calling us any minute now. And when he does, I'm going to do a, he's got different published works that I'm real proud to say that he's has accepted. He's a different genre than we're used to. And Christopher is really cool. He's got different websites. He's mostly into Wicca and, you know, candle magic, and he's into Norse Wiccan, so he's really cool. But he is a published author, and he does, you know, horror, sci-fi, fantasy, pulp fiction, you know, and he's really, he's expanding into different areas here. So it's interesting to see where Christopher's going to be and what he's up to. So he's got some different thoughts on keeping secrets. So when he calls in, I'm sure we're going to have a lively debate about things. And he should be calling any minute, and I don't know where he is, but he should be calling. So, you know, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's, you know, I do these shows just to kind of make you think, you know. And that's important. We want, you know, we want you to think. We don't want you to not think, you know. It's a spiritual revolutionary age, and we are, you know, shifting a lot of things there. So it's going to be good that we, you know, kind of look at things. I was just telling you know, my helper here, Douglas, about Saturn, you know, Scorpio, Saturnus and Scorpio, you know, in astrology, which I think I might bring somebody on with astrology. I have a couple people that I have in mind, really good astrologers, personalized astrologers, not the ones that scare you and not the ones that will say, oh, this is all gloom and doom, you know, we have the December 21st or something, 2012 is the end of the Mayan calendar, and we had you know, Jerry Gavin talk about that about a couple months ago with his messages from Margaret. And, you know, what happens is sometimes people will kind of make things out that they're not. And, you know, I've had callers ask me about the 2012 shifts. And what I have to tell you is the 2012 shifts are not anything to worry about. You know, it's what you make of it. It's like the optimist and the pessimist. Is a glass half empty or is it half full? And it's all on your perspective. And if you've done the work, if you have really looked at your stuff the past couple of years, and I would say actually since starting 2008.
Chris is with us in 9 months.
Okay. Oh, without further ado, Christopher is coming on. And hello, Christopher. How you doing?
Hello, Amy. I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And you are a published author. You have different works. If you go on my Angel Answers, if you go on bbsradio.com/angelanswers, Christopher has different websites here and where you can purchase his books and everything. Now, you're of a different genre. You do what, horror, sci-fi, fantasy, pulp fiction? And what else do you do?
Well, I write mostly in that genre and the various subgenres, including superheroes. And I recently submitted a story into an entirely different genre, the romance genre, so wish me luck.
Yeah, so did they accept it yet, or you don't know?
Not yet, but I got my fingers crossed.
Okay, I'm sure you, yes. You're a very creative soul, so I'm sure, because you've been getting a lot submitted lately, accepted, so that's cool. So without further ado, Chris, what do you feel that you, if you're, okay, we're going to talk about secrets today. When is it, do you think it's appropriate to, you know, keep a secret? Or do you think that, you know, when is it appropriate, when is it not appropriate in your opinion?
Well, I must say, in all honesty, it must depend according to different factors, like what type of secret are we talking about? What are the likely consequences if it's told? What are the likely consequences if it's not told? And, you know, basically, I would have to say you have to look at repercussions before anything. I would advise you should tell secrets if it's obvious that the secret is going to be found out in a short period of time. Then, you know, it's rather futile to keep the secrets, and people may become angry at you to learn you didn't tell them when they're going to find out, let's say, a week or a month later. I would say those types of secrets are most commonly those when like a certain relative happens to be sick and in the hospital, and for some inexplicable reason they tell you, don't tell anyone about this. Well, they know you're going to find out in a week or a month anyway, you know, especially if things take a turn for the worse. So you might as well tell people in those circumstances. Now, in terms of others, you know, if it's likely to cause devastation to a family, or, you know, then it may be best to think about it first, or at least discuss it with others who know the secret and decide, you know, how should it be told if it's told, who should do it, et cetera, et cetera. And at other times, you know, you got to decide, what are, you know, what's going to happen if you don't tell the secret.
Right, exactly. You know, like when you are, let's say, an addict, you know, and I remember being in the 12-step programs, you know, like Al-Anon, you know, they have a saying, sick is your secret, you know, but who you tell them to, especially in some of these 12-step groups, and I'm not trying to put them down, but sometimes those people do kind of blab your business to other people, you know. And but you want to get that confession is good for the soul. Once you agree, it's good for that person who is trying to work on their issues to kind of find a trusted person, maybe a clergyman, a therapist or something, to get that secret out so they don't maybe go back on the path of destruction to an addiction. I mean, I think that's kind of where you have to draw the line. That's when it's beneficial to get it out of your soul, you know, if you have a problem or something like that. Or, I don't know, what's your opinion on that?
I do agree that it's often very good, basically, to get an individual that you trust, maybe in a position of authority, and in a position where they're basically obligated to keep themselves, to keep to themselves what people confide in them, who are not directly connected to the situation, like perhaps not a family member, not affected by the situation. Yes, it's good. It's good to get advice from that type of person because you're more comfortable. But in regards to keeping an addiction from a family, your close family members are going to find out. It's that there are just too many, you know, obvious hints that you give when you're an addict. I mean, not all addicts let it get this far, don't get me wrong, but addicts who do let it get too far, they end up engaging in certain types of behavior that in and of itself is destructive and clearly leads any family member with half a common sense, you know, who are not going into total denial that, yes, you have a serious addiction problem, which is a serious medical problem.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes what an addict doesn't understand, or an alcoholic, or we'll just say an addict just for the sake of our, you know, just the general wise, will not understand that they're thinking they're keeping their addiction away from their family members when they probably could know anyway, you know, it's like, or the neighbors down the street know. They probably have, they think, you know, the addict will think that everybody doesn't know because they're hiding it. When they can see it, I mean, come on, you're not showing up for work. You're asking for money when, or you're stealing money. You know, you're doing things that maybe would, you know, kind of put a light bulb on in the person that you're doing, you know, your family members. There's something wrong with this person, you know. So that kind of secret is not, you know, people get ashamed of these kind of secrets when it's so, I think in our society, we're really coming to a point where we're exposing so much. Everything's coming out of the closet, you know, homosexual issues, abortion, you know, addictions. You know, people are becoming more educated, molestation, you know, and things are really not secret. Like, I think some people from the old school think it's still a taboo subject, but, you know, I think the more open and honest you are about your issues, the better off you're going to be.
Well, see, yeah, that's the thing, too, Amy, though. When you simply not telling a secret, you know, not talking about it openly with the people who are closest to you, when there's very obvious symptoms of the sort you described, you know, that's not really keeping a secret. It's just not talking about it with people, plain and simple. Because, you know, an addict who lets it go far, it's just very obvious. You know, and I could speak from someone who has had close family members as addicts. You know, like you said, the stealing, the constant asking money, the constant lying, you know, and harassing of people for, you know, asking for money, and all the lies you have to make up for it, which are ridiculous, and the lies that pile on top of lies to cut, in futile attempts to cover for the previous ones. Yes, You're just too symptomatic to totally keep it secret with your actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's amazing, some of the lies, too. You know, to be a good liar, you have to have a good memory. And it's like, some of these people, it's like, their brain cells are so gone. They're such in the depths of their addiction that they don't remember what they've told maybe the next person or that they're the person they're after.
Well, these are often lies of desperation, too, that you come up with almost on the spot.
Yeah, I know.
That's another thing.
Yeah, some people should be good, would be good storytellers. I had a friend of mine, or a former friend, she was a real good storyteller. When it came to that, you know, she was really lying through her teeth about different things. And you could tell, but, you know, that's her problem. You know, we just want to, you know, just telling secrets and keeping secrets are two different things. When do you think it's appropriate to keep a secret? What's your opinion about that? When is it appropriate?
Well, if I can come up with a for instance, let's say, you know, for example, you're living in a family, and let's say there's this family member has, you know, or this family, they have, let's say, a child, let's say teens, adults, let's say, for example, and they have an adopted child that grew up with them, not part of the family, teens, adults, and you find that those two are romantically involved with each other, you know, in that situation, I probably wouldn't come out to the family and say anything because that could cause a lot of problems, you know, that I would really think, in my opinion, is none of my business. I mean, if I found out about it accidentally, I may talk to the two individuals involved and say, you know, if I found out about it, others could too, the same way, so be careful. You know, and I suggest, give them advice, you know, maybe you might want to consider telling your family, but it's up to you.
Mm-hmm. Or how about, let's say, I have a relative that I've seen this, you know, they're married, you know, this relative's married to this one particular party, and you know, let's say this relative is, you know, a woman, and you go out maybe one night or you hang out at a, you know, pub or something or bar or whatever, or dinner or whatever, and you see that this relative, this person's spouse is out with another woman. You know, what do you do then? Do you go and tell that relative or you just keep your mouth shut because you know it's none of your business and they're probably going to think you're nuts by telling them?
Well, I would say you certainly, no one should ever certainly do it for vindictive reasons, of course.
Right, but you want them to know it. Yeah, look at your motives, too. Let's look at, you know, but you want them to know that, you know, their husband or their wife is going out, and maybe it's your best friend that they're with at the bar with, you know. I mean, that has happened to me, and it's like, okay, I didn't go and tell this person. I felt it was none of my concern because, A, I would have looked like I was, you know, telling lies, and B, you know, they would have been like, no, are you sure that, you know, that's so-and-so and that
and then
is a secret. Yeah.
Yeah, well, then there's the shoot the messenger pilot, you know, attitude.
I know. I would have been shot on the spot, execution style, no questions asked.
And even if you're telling the truth, and I'd like to think that person, if they knew you well enough, they would know you're telling the truth, still being the bearer of that kind of news, you know, that person's first instinct might be to lash out at you for that reason.
Right, yeah, well, this has happened to me. This is actually, that's a true life story, but I've never gone to that person and said, hey, I've seen your spouse out at, you know, and hanging out with your best friend, and that's what happened. You know, I feel that some, you know, that kind of secret or that kind of deception, I think, is uncovered eventually anyway. You know, it's like that person is going to find out anyway, that innocent spouse, we'll call it. They'll find out anyway. Maybe they're not so innocent. I don't know. But, you know,
Our chances are the person knows and are simply in denial about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and knowing this person's family, they're totally in denial of the whole clan. So, you know, hey, that wouldn't surprise me either. You know.
Yeah, and you know, if you tell them and you find out they know and are in denial, that could also cause you to get in an argument with them if you ask them, well, you know, are you going to keep putting up with it? And they basically give you an excuse to do it that you may see as a sign of weakness on their part and tell them, and that could lead into a dispute where you're ultimately told, mind your own business. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah, exactly. And sometimes what will happen is, too, you know, you'll go to the person thinking you are doing them a service, and here they're like, no, you know, they just kind of don't talk to you after that, you know, and that has happened not with me, but with another party that I know that went to this person. They didn't talk for 5 years. You know, it's like, it's, it's kind of sad, but sometimes it's just better just to, I think you have to go case by case, you know, with the scenario. You know,
which is what I think, too. I mean, not just the scenario, but the person you're talking to.
Right.
You know, weigh factors like how well do you know them? Mm-hmm. You know, think about your motive. Is it really out of concern for that person? And if it is, then consider, well, me knowing this person, how are they likely to react to this news? You know, and then, you know, I'd also find myself asking, well, if they don't know, and they do eventually find out, let's say months down the line, and they found out I knew about it, are they going to get angry at me for not telling? So you're going to wonder, is it a damned if you do and damned if you don't situation?
I know. Well, when I was in high school, I think I told you this story, but I had a friend who was being molested by her father, and she came to me. And we were 16 or something, I think. And I, you know, I was concerned because I felt her safety was at risk. You know, she came. We had seen one of the movies. I think Jodie Foster's The Accused, where there was a gang rape, you know, scene in the movie. She started crying, and she was over my house at a sleepover. And it took me a couple hours to get it out of her because she wanted to tell. She didn't want to tell me, but she needed to talk. You know, she needed to get it out. And you know, of course, I went to the authorities after she confided in me, and our relationship kind of went down south after that, but I was doing it out of concern because I could not see her in that household while her own father was molesting her. I just couldn't see it, you know, so it does. You know, you're damned if you do or damned if you don't, but, you know.
Well, I would say ultimately, you know, Ava, I think you probably did the right thing because, see, putting myself in a situation like that, I would think it's very, very hard to be convinced by a friend that you know is being hurt repeatedly in a situation and likely will continuously be, and they basically tell you, don't say anything about it because I don't want it to cause problems with the family. You know, and you're being put in a very nasty place. I mean, you know your friend is going to get hurt more if you don't do anything, but then the family is going to get quote-unquote hurt. And I think this is one of those situations, or might be, you know, it's debatable, don't get me wrong, might be one of those situations where instead of choosing the right thing or the wrong thing, you have to choose between the greater and lesser evil. And I think at the very least, you chose the lesser evil. So I think you probably did the right thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I went to my parents, you know, and they said, stay out of it. And you know, you have that intuition. You're like, no, I have to say something. I couldn't live with it. You know, I couldn't live, you know, seeing her. And she'd cry after that. I mean, I kept it for a little while after. I didn't say anything. And I saw her crying and upset. And it just tore me apart because I know what was going on, you know. And you have to really look at your motives. What is your motives for doing this? Is it right? Is it because maybe, let's go back to that, you know, seeing that, you know, that spouse, that cheating spouse, and you know, the innocent spouse. Are you going back because you can't stand that person, you know, the innocent spouse? And going, yeah, I saw your husband at the bar, you know, your best friend, so-and-so, you know. You got to, are you going to really do it out of genuine concern? Now, that to me is none of my business. If I see them out, I'm like, I don't want to know.
Well, if you're known, if you're known to dislike that friend's spouse, you know, she could easily accuse you of, you know, you just don't like him and you want me to get rid of him. She, even though it's not true, if she goes into total denial when you tell her, you know, you could be accused of having bad motives when in actuality you didn't.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think it all depends on what, you know, I mean, in my family, you didn't tell people what was your personal business. You know, it was like a taboo. Well, you know, I grew up in a very dysfunctional family, and, you know, you didn't go there. But when I started telling my, you know, bearing my soul, because I had all these secrets, I thought I was the shame and blamers coming in here. You know, and I was ashamed of this. And then when I start talking about things, too, that's another thing. When you start talking about things with someone you trust, and you find out maybe that person has been through something similar or it's not such a bad thing as you thought it was. Because I think when you carry a secret around, too, and you think it's horrible, you think that you're damaged in some way or you're not a good person or whatever it is. When you really can, you know, if you start telling people, maybe you tell someone who's maybe like, maybe someone will say something that you can relate to and you say, yeah, I've been through that, too, or I didn't really want to talk about this because I thought I was the only one. I think that's appropriate. What do you think?
very much so, because a lot of self-guilt can occur if you, for some reason, think you're alone in feeling a certain way, or in having a certain type of secret, or having experienced, you know, certain types of events. If you think you're alone, as the saying goes, it could be a very lonely place, you know, and you could, but talking to other people and at least finding out you're not alone, it helps you to realize that there are other people who can understand, because if you think your situation is unique, you feel nobody else could possibly understand.
Right, yeah, and then you are putting a lot on yourself. And that could be like blame, shame. And, you know, we do so much damage to ourselves. I think we are our worst enemy, our own worst critic, our own worst self-loathing person. We really are. We really put ourselves down. We're very critical.
Well, there's no doubt. One of the worst kinds of hatred, and we know all kinds of hatred are bad, you know, unless it's a hatred of an abstract concept rather than a person or a group of people. But one of the worst types of hate is self-hate, I think.
I think so, too, or self-loathing. That is, like, the worst possible thing you could do to yourself. When you really...
Well, it's hard for other people to respect you if they realize you don't like yourself. That's another problem, and, you know, secrets can do that. But, see, sometimes I think one of the reasons I've kept secrets from certain people, because, obviously, I have certain family members whom you probably know that they're the type of person, if you do confide in them, you know, at some point in the future, they'll use that against you.
Ah, yes. You brought up a very good point. Yes. 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 Because, yeah, people, you know, they take it upon themselves to be the judge, jury, and executioner.
Well, if there's someone, even if they're a family member who loves you, if they don't like you at the same time, you know, basically, you know, you're handing them cannon fodder to, you know, you're becoming cannon fodder because you're handing them ammunition to use against you in the future. Once, you know, you get into some other kind of argument with them, they'll say, well, you're the one who did this and that. You're the one who kissed your friend's wife. You know, you told me that yourself. You were the one who had a friend, you know, who had a friend who turned out to be a criminal. I mean, what does that say about you hanging out with people like that? And those are not exaggerations either.
I know. I'm just laughing because Well, I mean, I understand actually where you're coming from. You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's almost, yeah, you do have to watch who you associate with. I get that. But that doesn't mean you have to kind of lump me in with that lot of people. You know, sometimes it's like, and I myself had made bad judgments, you know, with people too. You know,
I've done my share. We all pick the wrong person to be friends with at one time or another.
Right, yeah. But unfortunately, it's more than one. It's more than not.
Well, yeah, and it's, yeah, and, well, okay, one time or another, some people 10 times or another, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, some mistakes are harder to learn from than others, let's face it. You know, we all want friends, and during a time we're feeling lonely, we're vulnerable to picking the wrong people. I've done that.
Right, yeah.
You know, I've picked bad friends before because I felt I had no other friends at the time and paid the price.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you pick some friends, too, that maybe... I don't know. I mean, there's some people, like, I found out that, you know, there's certain friends you're just, like, so glad that you're not friends with them anymore. You're just so glad. You're like,
well,
oh,
yes, because, yeah, if you're lonely, you can pick people who are unscrupulous and you kind of know they're just using you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you tolerate it because you feel at that time it's better than having no friends.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, it's... It doesn't help, you know. But then you go through this phase where you're just like, okay, I don't know who my friends are. I don't want to know who my friends are. You want to crawl. Yeah.
I think that's where the saying comes from. You know, with friends like these, who needs enemies?
I know. Yeah, I've been there, done that. Like you have, Christopher.
Exactly, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are thinking, I've been there too, and I know numerous people who've been there too. It's, you know, and hopefully that'll help them to realize they're not alone either.
Yeah, You know, it's scary because you do have to realize that you are not a bad person if you have an associate, let's say that's a drug dealer or something, and you find out later, and you're like, whoa, what the hell? What's going on here? You know, things happen. We're all vulnerable at one time or another.
Things do happen, and sometimes we might be friends with unscrupulous people because we honestly see some good in them. You know, it may be a person, like, for example, who doesn't use us, and we honestly believe there's some good in them.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the majority of people on this world have varying shades of gray. I believe total good and total evil, or something close to it, is relatively rare in human beings. Most of us, I think, are varying shades of gray between some darker shades than others.
Yeah, you got that right.
You know, and I think many of us, if not most of us, you know, have a chance, you know, perhaps more than once throughout life where we could go wrong under a certain chain of circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think all of us have reached at least one, if not more, turning points in our life where we have to make a certain decision that if we make one of the two or perhaps a certain of three decisions, we can go down a path where, you know, we go down a very dark shade of gray.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're all not, like you said, it depends on, you know, where we're going and what we're doing. But I really feel that, you know, people, how can I put this? There's varying shades of gray. And I think sometimes, you know, when you're keeping a secret or you're the receiver or the recipient of someone telling you a secret, you kind of have to be careful, you know, about what you do with those secrets, too. You know, confidentiality. But what will happen is sometimes people will tell you their secrets and then they want you to react to it or something. You're like, I don't know how to react to this. I really don't. I really don't know how to react to this.
Well, it's one that totally dumbfounds you and shocks you and causes your jaw to drop to the ground, you know, and you're wondering, what am I supposed to say? You know, you're thinking, what does this person want me to say?
Yeah, I know.
You know, like, do they want a specific reaction or just any type of reaction and not just you there looking at them dumbfounded, you know?
Yeah, really. Yeah, it's like, you know, there was a former friend of mine. I think she just told me her secrets of shock value because I just look at her like, okay, what do you want me to do with this? You want me to put this on the Internet or something?
Well, that's what I'd be wondering, too. You know, if someone just tells you something to shock you, you know, some people, I guess, like doing that. They're bored or they're tired of being the good boy or the good girl in their family, and they say, you know, I want to do something, you know, not so nice for once, you know, just to get noticed. Or a girl says, I want to get pregnant out of wedlock, you know, because I'm sick of my controversial sister getting all the attention, you know. Some people do think that way.
Wow, yeah, it's like, okay. Wow, yeah, people are weird when it comes to that stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, just like some people, a lot of younger people, but, you know, older people do, have been known to steal on purpose with the hope of getting caught just, you know, to get attention that they're not getting any other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like, wow, you know. Yeah, some people, yeah, it's, but I mean, I don't know if I would, you know, want to be a keeper of, you know, getting knocked up or something, you know. I don't know about that.
I certainly wouldn't, but that shows you have more common sense than some of those individuals. That, you know, it shows you're not desperate for attention. You know, that's, you know, desperation. And people do bad things when they're desperate, you know, or not so wise things, at least, when they're desperate. You know, that's why I tell individuals, you know, don't get so, like, you know, people who are desperate to lose weight, don't get so desperate that you do foolish things like gulping down diet pills by the handful, you know, or you know, going out running for hours when you know you have bad knees, you know, that's what desperation could do.
Yeah, and some people, you know, when they're in that predicament, you know, people are, you know, when they're trying to lose weight, you know, they shove their fingers down their throat. There could be, you know, bulimia, you know, or take diet, you know, laxatives. I mean, it all depends. I mean,
ask them about it. Yeah, you can hear the desperation in their voice when they tell you, "But I have to slim down. I want to slim down." You know, it's a positive goal, but the desperate methods taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Exactly. So it's almost like, hey, where is this coming from here? Where is this coming from? Yeah, exactly. I mean, secrets, I think, all in all, I think 9 times out of 10, you know, keeping a secret can really be, I think, detrimental to your soul. It depends on what it is, but I think all in all, keeping a secret, you know, and not telling anyone that you're maybe bulimic or knocked up or something, you know, it's kind of detrimental, especially the knocked up part. You know, like I said, you're going to have a baby bump in about, you know, how many months here? You got a kid coming
out. Well, you
out.
Know, with my personal, you know, the circumstances of my birth that I'm not ashamed to reveal here because it's the truth, you know, my mother, you know, with, you know, help from my grandmother, of course, successfully kept the fact that she was pregnant from my grandfather until the day I was born. I mean, it's possible. And they did it because, you know, their intention was to get me adopted and he'd be none the wiser. But then, you know, once I was born, my great-grandfather, who was alive at the time, on my maternal side, found out I was born and, you know, and had a talk with her and offered to take me himself. As far as, I mean, he was old school, but as far as he was concerned, I was family. You know, you don't give family up, so they decided, yeah, they got to come home, sit my grandfather down and tell him there's, you know, an addition to the family.
Yeah, and he was not too pleased with that, was he? You know, that's actually a deception, if you look at it. That's a deception from your mother and, you know, whoever else was helping your mother. That's
my grandmother, part of her machinations.
yeah, well, you know, that's a deception, and I don't know how your grandfather got over that, but he did. It must have taken
well,
him long.
I guess that depends because my relationship with him was very rocky, you know, and it's just recently started to mellow out now that he's, you know, in his advanced years, but it was very rocky between us. And I've always found myself wondering, you know, was there still resentment, you know, there that, you know, was a carryover from those days that, you know, he directed at me rather than my mother.
Right. Yeah.
So I wonder to what extent he got over it, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. You know, my circumstances of my birth too. You know, my parents married. My mother was close to 38 when she had me, but my dad, who's 5 years younger than my mom, not the. Okay. Oh, we have a caller, Chris. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Who am I speaking with? Hi. Who am I speaking with?
George. George.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. How can I help you today? You want to you want a reading, or do you want to kind of jump in, or with the discussion?
I'll jump in. Can I get a free question? I had a question I want to ask.
Sure.
I had invested in some currency, Vietnamese currency. I want to know if it's going to pay off.
Okay. Let me take a look. Just wanted to let you know that I'll give you what the angels tell me. Okay. And we'll take,
okay.
Ooh, this looks good. All right, let me take a look. Let me do this Vietnamese card, let's see. Let's see. Okay. Slow at first, but not until next April do I see that picking up for you. That looks good. You're going to get a nice payout, but not until next April.
April 2013?
2013, you got it.
Okay. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
I had met this girl online, and we've been talking for about 4 years now. It's hard for us to come together. Do you see it moving anywhere?
Okay, it's definitely continued communication. Let me see. Let's see. You definitely have good communication with this woman, don't you?
Yes, and I want to know, does she love me like she says she does? She says she loves me, and I want to know.
Yeah, it looks like she does, and she does see a future with you. However, I don't see until after the first of the year, and I'm getting February, that this thing is really going to pick up and take off. But she does love you. I do see a future with this woman, yes.
She faithful to me?
I'm getting yes. From what I'm seeing, yes.
Okay. Also, I want to ask about her. She says she has an inheritance that her father left a bunch of money. Her father was in the oil business and the money, and she can't get her hands on it right now. Do you see us coming together and getting that inheritance?
And part of next year, not until September of next year.
September of next year?
Yeah, it looks like there's some legal battles here still to be had, but not until September of next year.
Okay. All right, then. And
Okay.
And something I invested in called Prosperity Program. You see them coming out?
Okay.
Prosperity Programs? When you see that coming out?
I'm hearing drop that one, honey. That one, I don't feel solid. Like I said, I'm not a financial advisor, but I'm just getting what I'm getting from my angels, honey. Okay?
You don't pick up nothing with that?
Yeah, I would drop it. I don't feel real good. Okay?
Okay, all right.
All right, sweetheart. Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. I appreciate
You're welcome.
You answered my question. All right, thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. Well, Christopher, as we were talking about our births, our conception.
Yep.
Yeah. My mom, you know, didn't want to tell my dad she was pregnant with me. He told her he could not follow her children. Now, I'm proof that he lied about that. That was a big secret right there. He lied. You know, it depends on how you look at it. But, you know, my mother, I think, kept it from my dad for a while because she didn't know how to handle it, you know, because he said that he didn't want kids. You know, and they kept that from me for a long time. And I always felt, you know, it was my own stuff, too, that my father and I don't relate to each other now. And I do believe that even with the, you know, I think my father held some resentment against me. You know, I think he had plans for my mother and him, you know, because she had two daughters from a previous marriage who were in their teenage years when he came around. So I think a part of him resented that, too, and it's just now that it's kind of mellowed over in a bit, but there's still kind of, you know, walls up there. So I can relate, because your grandfather and my father are quite a bit alike in personality from what we've talked about.
I would say so, and I guess, you know, we can at least assuage their concerns by saying, you know, we're part of their genetic legacy. We're carrying it on.
Well, hopefully we learn from that.
Very
we carry
much
over
so.
What we don't like, you know.
We're the one shot at immortality, or a version of it.
Yeah, really. You know, you never know with family. But, you know, families, it's amazing what secrets we find out about our families, too. You know, I've told the story before. My dad was, you know, ashamed of his Native American heritage, you know, and then I found out my grandfather, his father, was half Native American. And so when I was doing the genealogy, you know, and I found out from, you know, a couple of great aunts that were still hanging around at the time, you know, my father goes, don't tell anybody that. And I said, why? I think it's cool. You know, I got Native American blood going through my veins. You know, and, you know, my mother found out my great-grandmother had some secrets, too, and I wasn't supposed to tell. But I thought, who cares? It's part of the family history, you know. What's the big deal? Two generations later, who cares?
I guess, yeah, I don't really understand about the concept of shame over your lineage, you know, when you weren't there. And I don't understand, you know, if you find out, you know, heaven forbid you have French ancestry in your lineage, how does that affect you as a person now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who your ancestor was in the 17th century or so, does that really mean, you know, if you're carrying on that person's genetic heritage, does that mean you're destined to somehow be that person again? I mean, okay, you can inherit, you know, hereditary illnesses, for example, but does that mean you inherit the, you know, the concept of Frenchness itself? That's a societal and cultural construct.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you go back, okay, let's say you're into your genealogy, which a lot of people are, and they go back and they find out their heritage there, here. Who cares if you're part of Rasputin's bloodline or Attila the Hun, you know? It's not who you are today. It really isn't. Or you're part of, who was that guy that betrayed George Washington? Oh, you know, what the heck's his name? I forgot. I can't think
Benedict
of
Arnold.
Benedict Arnold, thank you. You know, if you're his 50th grandchild or great-great-great-grandchild or whatever the heck it is, are you going to betray your country? I don't think so.
Yeah, does that mean you have an inherent proclivity towards being a traitor?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way: these ancient tyrants like Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan. Let's face it: with the way they traveled the world and how many much portions of the world they ruled, chances are a lot of us have some of their DNA in them. Does that make us like them? I mean,
no.
A lot of people are going to be ashamed nowadays. I mean, a large portion of the world, if that's the case.
I know. It's kind of ridiculous when you think about it. You know, and what was so, I mean, Victorian England, for example, you know, the sex, you know, talking about sex, it was like, oh, taboo. You know, I call my mother Victorian because it's like she kind of blushes when we talk about masturbation. You know, it's like,
A lot of the Victorian attitudes are still around. You could see a good example. Call any woman in public a slut or a whore, and watch her go crazy and say, "I am not a slut. I am not a whore." When you realize these are Victorian concepts, the idea where it's shameful for a woman to, you know, express her enjoyment of that natural thing, whereas men could do it all they want. I keep wondering why more women and men do not get up and say, "We're sick of this double standard. We're sick of feeding into it."
Right.
But they do.
Well, a lot of women will do that. They're ashamed of their sexuality, and they're still, you know, like women will, you know, this is from the woman's point of view, menopause, you know, women are still kind of like not talking about it. Like, why is this so taboo? Why are not we talking about hot flashes and stuff? You know, there's different facets and there's sexuality. I mean, so what if you have multiple orgasms, you know? That's great. You know, guys are happy when that happens, you know?
And women tend to be happy too, you know, in consensual situations. Yet, you know, then they want to be quiet about it because if their friends find out, they're going to use it against them. I'd like to hear women say, "Is chastity the only virtue, or the ultimate, if not the only virtue we can have?" Like they used to think back in the Victorian days, is it the ultimate virtue we can have? You know, why not our degree of honesty as a person, how we treat others as a person? You know, are we scrupulous in our dealings with everyone? Do we work hard at our chosen vocation? Do we make positive contributions to society? You know, were we the first person to sail around the world, you know, alone, like Laura Decker, being the youngest person at 14 to sail around the world completely on her own? These are fantastic. And when you look at these things, so what? If they've had 10 sex partners in 2 years, why judge them on that? You know, is the mean attribute for which to judge? If I didn't just screw that up, if I made sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's such a different everyone. You know, women especially. You know, there is a double standard in our society still. You know, women are not to tell their current mates how many sex partners they've had. You know, especially if their mate has only had, like, 3 and they've had 500. I mean, you know, there's a discrepancy here. And, you know, that's something that, that's difficult to really, you know, grasp. There's still a double standard in our society. And it's pretty sad.
And it affects men, too. Yes, in the opposite direction, where men feeling compelled to have as many sex partners as possible. Otherwise, they're seen as deficient in some way. They're, you know, not as a stud, or they're accused of being homosexual or something. Not that there's anything wrong with being homosexual, but if they're not, you know, and that's also derogatory to real homosexuals because it implies they're, you know, deficient. Or homosexual men, that is, you know, that they're deficient for not having women somehow. And heterosexual men are deficient for not having large numbers of women. You know, so that's why both genders are encouraged by our culture to lie, but in the opposite direction.
Right, yeah, there's that double standard. And I hope that we start just being honest with each other, with different areas, all areas of our life, I think.
That
you know
that we stop thinking sexuality is evil.
I think it's pretty cool, damn it, you know, I'm just kidding.
It is. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's something neither to brag about nor to pillarize someone over. You know, it should, in terms of male and, you know, and female respectively, it should not be used to judge people either way. You know, a man who, let's say, has only had 3 sex partners in 5 years, God forbid, you know, he shouldn't be derided for that, and a woman who's had, you know, 100 sex partners in 3 years should not be judged on that more than any other trait that she has.
Right. And that's the sad part, because I think that all of us, you know, it goes down to judgment and opinions, and sometimes, you know, that's where we keep secrets, because we don't want to be judged to be this evil person. That's what it comes down to. Are they going to think ill of me? Are they going to think I'm a bad person because I did this? Are they, you know... And we can't control what other people's thoughts and emotions and feelings and opinions are, or judgments. We have to go with our own. Well, Chris, we got to wrap this up because it's coming close to the end here. So I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you for giving us your 2 cents, and it's good 2 cents because usually it makes 4.
I appreciate you for having me, Amy. It was a blast. Anytime. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And next week, remember, Karen Noe is coming on the show for her book, Through the Eyes of Another, A Medium's Guide to Creating Heaven on Earth by Encountering Your Life Review Now. Pick it up. It's great. And may the angels carry you through until next week. Take care. Bye-bye.